Mr. Lukanen, sir. I will give you an oral notice at 5 minutes and again at 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Alex Luchenitzer for plaintiff's appellants. The holding of graduations in the intensely religious environment of Elmbrook Church forcibly imposes religion.
So what is the harm? Forcibly imposes religion? What, they have to convert to go into the graduation?
Your Honor.
What is the harm, concretely?
Students and parents are forced to enter a religious environment.
They're not forced. They don't have to go to the graduation.
But, Your Honor, in Lee versus Weissman.
Compulsory.
In Lee versus Weissman.
I didn't go to my high school graduation. Okay, so but if they want to go to the graduation, they're in the church. Now what? It's a secular ceremony. So what happens? What's the harm?
Your Honor, they're forced to be in a religious environment for hours. They're essentially forced to stare at a giant cross that is directly above the stage.
Okay, so what? So what? You're in a religious environment. What's the big deal?
Your Honor, the harm here is more severe than what
we have
in Lee
versus... What is the harm?
The harm is that they're having a religion that they do not believe in.
No, they're not having a religion. They're not being forced to convert. They're sitting in a church, right?
They're sitting in a church with
Bibles.
What is
often in an environment which is not your preferred environment? Maybe you didn't like it when the crier said, you know, God save the United States in this honorable court. Right? Does that make this a religious activity that we're engaged in here?
No, Your Honor,
What do you think of that?
That is a ceremonial deism.
Pardon?
That's been a
What do you think of having a crier say in a secular courtroom, God save the United States?
Your Honor, that is perfectly constitutional. It's been held to be a ceremonial
deism. Now, that's not an answer. You tell me what is the difference between that and all the other religious symbols that surround us and coins and so on, and once in your lifetime, because you only graduated from high school once, you're in a church. It's a secular ceremony, but there you are in a church. So what's the harm? These people convert? Is that what happens? They walk out of there and they're members of this congregational church?
Your Honor, symbols often speak louder than words, and the cross is the most well-known.
I don't know what that means.
The cross is the most well-known.
There are crosses all over the place. You walk down the street, you'll see women wearing crucifixes.
But the government isn't forcing you to look.
The government is not forcing anything because you don't have to go to graduation. They just try to find, it's not alleged, I believe, that they're trying to convert people. They're trying to find, in terms of price and seating capacity and comfort and so on, they're trying to find an alternative, I guess, to their gym. Right? The parents don't like the gym. Graduation, they look around, they look at various places, find this church. It's comfortable, it's large. So what? I got to ask you, what is the harm?
In your brief and in some of the amicus briefs, maybe this is harm, maybe it isn't, but you assert that there are religious groups, you know, perhaps Orthodox Jews, perhaps Jehovah's Witnesses, who actually forbid going into a sanctuary of some other faith.
That's correct, Your Honor. Some people can't even go to their graduations if they're held in a religious environment of a different faith. And the Supreme Court held in the Lee versus Weissman case that graduation is not a voluntary event. So saying that you don't have to go is not
But does it
answer.
Follow from this that it would also be forbidden by the Constitution for the state to establish a polling place in a church?
No, Your Honor. Those cases are distinguishable for several reasons.
I'm not asking about cases. I'm asking about the structure of your argument. If your argument is that some religions forbid going in places that are holy to other religions, then the fact that I, in sequence, was directed by the city of Chicago to vote in a Catholic seminary under a crucifix and then was directed to vote in a Jewish congregation, would both be unconstitutional, would they not?
Your Honor, it does sound like your rights were probably violated.
But isn't the question, I thought there were two aspects of this question, one being age and one being alternatives.
That's right. Those cases, there are, I think, three or four ways to distinguish the church voting situation. One, it involves adults, not children, the Establishment Clause.
I don't know why you want us to distinguish them. If you're true to your principles, you would just say those cases are wrong. We want you to disagree with them. I'm puzzled by your effort to say that they were right and you were right, too.
Well,
maybe they are wrong.
In certain circumstances, it's constitutional. In certain circumstances, it isn't. If there's no opt-out, if you have to vote in the church, if you're not allowed to vote absentee or at a different precinct, if there's a crucifix.
You're not allowed to vote in a different precinct.
No,
you have to vote in the assigned precinct.
There's a crucifix? Come on. Yeah, I'll give you an example from my personal history. So when I was in junior high school in the 1950s, the high school, which was a public high school, sponsored dancing classes for the kids, to make the boys a little more civilized. And also ballroom dancing was much more popular in the 50s. So this school function was held in a local Protestant church, community church. And I think they did it because it was sort of a cozier environment. It had a nice room with nice floors. I don't know why I remember it so vividly. It had nice floors. And they probably thought it was a better site than the gym and the school. They probably didn't want to keep the school open at night. Was that unconstitutional?
If the room was non-religious, if there weren't icons, religious
this
icons
is a,
in
this
the room.
This is the community church of, Scarsdale or whatever it was. It was definitely a church. Nobody cared, I must say, including the non-Christians. But I think under your theory, any use of religious properties by a public government organization is unconstitutional.
No, Your Honor. The test that the court should ask is the environment of the building religious? So in this case, the environment is clearly religious.
Look, this was a church where this dancing school was. This was a church. Of course, the environment was religious. Now, since it was Protestant, they probably didn't have crucifixes. But it was a church. You want to have a rule, they can have in these sort of low Protestant churches that don't have crosses and so on. They can have it there. They can't have it in a church that has a cross. And so we're going to have a jurisprudence in which we examine the interiors of religious buildings. We say, this one has a crucifix. We don't like the crucifix. Or this is too big. This crucifix is kind of frightening, and the pictures might fall. Is that what we're going to be reduced to?
Courts do ask these questions.
A whole new jurisprudence of church interiors?
Courts ask similar questions in religious display cases.
Well, and isn't this a situation where it's not just a 20-foot cross, but banners, literature adorn the church's walls. Some of them encourage students to join youth ministries. Bibles, hymnals, and other religious material remained in the pews where they sat. Where the family was, and there were other options here. There were 11 other options. Isn't that correct?
That's right, Your Honor.
But, of course,
your suggestion
is that the best option would be a negotiation with the church in which they say, look, we'd love to have it here, but the banners,
sure.
You're going to have to remove the banners.
No, I thought you were
churchy, and that cross. Maybe you should cover it up and have some drape over it. Then we can use it. It seems to me that this is going to. I think the borrowing of there are a lot of church properties, a lot of municipal functions, where they're borrowing other facilities, and it seems to me we're going to have a really elaborate jurisprudence, church interiors and this. Why does it matter? What is the harm? Do you think this kind of borrowing leads to more more of these kids becoming congregational or evangelical Christians?
Isn't the harm that certain people just don't go to their graduation?
I'm asking him what he thinks. So I'd like my question answered.
Your Honor, there's a more intrusive, more extensive coercive imposition of religion here than in the school prayer cases.
Is there evidence of this? Are there studies which show that when you have schools or what have you borrowing facilities from churches, it has an effect on people's religious beliefs or something else?
No, Your Honor, we don't have evidence like that, but we do know that.
But what you had was evidence of the sense of exclusion, the message that people are outsiders when the government provides this sort of endorsement. And there you have your clients submitted affidavits to that effect, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. The plaintiffs felt highly uncomfortable in this environment. One of the plaintiffs actually had to miss most of the plaintiff's child's graduation because the plaintiff was so uncomfortable with being in that environment. The plaintiff...
How much would have to change to satisfy your clients? Could the ceremony be held, for example, in a church-owned space that was not used or dedicated or decorated for worship? A gym, a fellowship hall, etc.
Probably. Not all the plaintiffs might agree, but at least some of them would be comfortable if you had a situation where all the religious icons would be covered up.
That's a very delicate kind of request to make.
So
right, and that raises entanglement issues.
So these people, your clients, if they visited Rome, they wouldn't go into St. Paul's. They wouldn't look for the Michelangelo and the Bernini's and so on because they'd be very uncomfortable because it's not their religion. What kind of people are these? I don't understand that. Go into a room that represents a culture different from yours? A Christian never goes into a mosque or a synagogue and vice versa? But I don't understand that.
Your Honor, just as religion does not belong in the schoolhouse, no more does it belong in a school ceremony.
But it's a building. It's not a it's not a ceremony. It's not a religious ceremony.
But you can't ignore the religious items around you.
I don't know why you can't ignore it.
I mean, I would urge the members of the court to look at some of the pictures in the appendix, pages 213 through 17.
Evidence. Where are the studies? Look, it's 50 years since Shemp. Before that, you had all sorts of prayers in schools. In that period where prayers in schools are banned, the country has become much more religious. So where's the evidence that these little gestures, requirements, exposure to Christian symbols or what have you, have an effect on people's beliefs?
Your Honor, we don't have evidence like that, but a prayer at graduation, does that convert anybody? I don't think it converts anybody either, but the court has held that is unconstitutional.
Now, I understand why you don't want to have a religious ceremony in a school. I understand that. I think it's a big deal myself, but I understand that as a line. But it's different from the sort of passive use of the facility, borrowing the facility for a secular purpose. Probably a lot of religious people object to that. They think that's sort of sacrilege to be using a church for secular purpose.
Could I ask you a question? Could you address one of the issues raised in the amicus briefs?
Yes.
In particular, I think it was the American Center for Law and Justice was suggesting that if we were to agree with you, that your theory would prohibit the purchase of goods or services by school corporations or other government entities from businesses that have some kind of visible religious affiliation. Could you address that suggestion that your theory would reach that far?
Yes, Your Honor. It is perfectly constitutional for the government to contract with religious organizations if the services or items provided are not religious. But if, for example, the government contracts with a religious organization to provide social services and the content of the social services is religious, then there's a constitutional violation. Here, too, it's perfectly constitutional for government to rent a non-religious building from a religious organization, but if the environment of the building is religious, then a government event and government funds are being used to advance religion, and there the constitutional violation lies.
Suppose, let me ask a different question if I could. Suppose, about how far your theory reaches, suppose a school wants to take a class on a field trip that will include a visit to a church that has some historic significance. Take downtown Boston, for example, with historical or architectural significance. Would that be an establishment of religion for some students and their parents might object?
Probably not, Your Honor. At least if there's an opt-out, if students don't have to go, that takes care of the coercion problem.
Don't have to go? I don't understand that. I mean, religion is one of the great, whether you like it or not, it's one of the major cultural forces in the history of the world. And to say that a kid can refuse to go on a field trip, which includes a visit to a church, seems to me to be absurd. You just can't shut yourself off and say, I'm not going to be exposed to this important force in human history because I happen not to share the beliefs of the facility that I'm visiting. You can't.
Your Honor, and also it's presented as part of academic study, so there's no endorsement.
But you said there ought to be an opt-out there.
That would ensure there's no violation.
Well, but does that mean that if you teach history of the United States and you talk about, you know, abolitionism and religious abolition, you talk about the Mormons and so on and so forth, you mean that a student can say, well, I'm not gonna study any of that stuff and I'm not gonna take an exam because I don't like these religions?
That would be going too far, Your Honor. In the context of academic study, there's no message of endorsement of religion being
communicated. But now what if, you know, the Amish, they make chicken, they make a very good cake. So if a school decides to buy its cakes from the Amish, again, is that going to create a religious issue. No,
of course not, Your Honor, but say a school decides to buy milk and milk cartons from a religious group that have religious messages on the milk cartons. Say the milk cartons say, worship Jesus. Then I think you would have a constitutional violation. And even if the school district does so because this milk is better and cheaper than any milk you can get anywhere else, the school would still be coercively subjecting students to religious messages.
I'm now completely lost. This is presumably a claim under the Establishment Clause,
yes,
that if you have this milk carton with a religious message on it, you've established that religion. And then if you have a chicken with a different religious message, you've established a different religion. So we've now established two religions at one lunch. And if you serve Pepsi, we've now established Pepsi as the national beverage. I mean, is it possible to connect any of this argument to what it means to establish a religion, or is this all just being made up?
I mean, there's three principles here. No religious coercion, no endorsement, and no use of public funds, public activities to advance a religious message. So if you're bringing in items into the school that have religious messages on them, that would seem to actually violate all three principles.
And so by parallel, if you serve Coke in the lunchroom, you've established Coke as the national beverage or as the state beverage or the school district's beverage. That can't possibly be right. That suggests there's some problem here in how we define what establishment means, doesn't it?
Well, you're sending a message that the school approves of Coke, but that's not a constitutional violation.
Sending a message that the school thought that was the best bargain it could get on a drink.
Or maybe the religion was subsidizing the milk so that people would buy cartons that said, come to Jesus. I mean, has anyone looked into why the church here was cheaper than anybody else per square foot? Charging a market price, or were they trying to get people in the door of the church so that the church's message would be disseminated?
Well, that's certainly very likely why the church was able to charge a lower price than other facilities.
It's hard to believe that fuel costs would have been different or that janitorial staff would have been not all that well paid to begin with, so hard to believe anything else would account for the difference in price.
Yes, Your Honor, the church has affirmatively refused to cover up the cross in the sanctuary.
But I don't think that's a productive line for you to go down at all. I think Judge Posner was quite right to say we don't want to be the interior decoration committee for all churches. In the sanctuary, not in the sanctuary, strikes me as enough of a line. And the church said, for very understandable reasons, it didn't want to cover up the cross. It's proud of what it is, as it should be. It's a church. And there's nothing wrong with being a church. The only question is whether you could hold, you know, the high school English classes in the church sanctuary, or whether you can hold the graduations in the church sanctuary, or whether you can hold all of the school assemblies in the church sanctuary.
Yes, Your Honor. And, I mean, we do think that the affirmative refusal to cover the cross or any of the other religious items does support a conclusion that the church's motive was in part to spread its faith, to expose itself.
The church's motive doesn't really matter here, though, does it?
It shouldn't matter. It should not matter.
You don't want to get into a position of criticizing a church for refusing to cover up the cross.
Right.
It would be grotesque for the church to cover the cross, right?
Well, it did one year.
Draw attention to it, right?
Council, building was available for two other organizations as well. Am I right?
Yes, two other schools use the facility, and a community college also uses the facility.
Let me switch, if I may, and ask you, as my brothers and sisters, have a question about a hypothetical, whether it be permissible. I have in front of me here a picture of Arlington National Cemetery on May 27th, 2010. It's a picture of the graves of the soldiers, and all have a cross on them. All have the flag of the United States next on the right side of the grave stone. In fact, in the picture I have, a member of the Old Guard is placing those flags on the graves. Every child in northern Indiana in the seventh grade, every public school, makes a trip to Washington in the springtime, and they visit as a class the National Cemetery. Under your rationale, would that trip now be forbidden?
No, Your Honor. Those crosses are not intended to send religious messages, but are intended to send messages of commemorating
crosses.
Reflect the religion. Don't some of the graves have Stars of David?
Yeah, that's also correct. It's a situation where the individual service members, their families decide what memorial marker goes on.
All those children would be exposed to religious symbols, both the Star of David and the cross, in conjunction with the American flag at a government facility. And can this teacher take them as a class to Arlington National Cemetery?
Yes, Your Honor, because the main message being sent there is a historical one, not a religious one.
But there's no
historical one?
Yes, they're not being placed in a religious environment. There's a diversity.
And that's why the flag's there, and that's why the cross is there.
But there's a diversity of religious symbols.
Well, that's right. Isn't it different if there is a way that each individual person or the remains of that person can identify his or her religion, as opposed to everybody joining together in one religion's sanctuary?
That's right. The government doesn't identify itself with the specific burial markers because they're chosen by the individual, so it's a product of the individual choice.
It's a government marker paid for by the United States government, as a matter of fact. Here, the marker quite clearly doesn't belong to the government and quite clearly wasn't put there in the government. As a matter of fact, the students, through their advisory vote, know very clearly that that's not the government's cross. Is that right?
But the government, Your Honor, forces the students to enter the environment. You have one ceremony of one religion, so the message sent is that the government approves of this particular religion. The government surely would not hold a graduation in a mosque or another or another building of a minority religion.
Why not?
Because there would be protest from the majority community.
You all have, there's a question about whether that's outside the record. You all have looked at news reports from around the country, correct, about this kind of practice?
That's correct, and there's
Did you find any report, I'd be interested in the defendant's view of this as well, any indication of the use of the minority religions?
No, Your Honor, all the reports.
Brief interruption, 5 minutes left. Your metaphorical white light is on.
Thank you, Your Honor. All the news reports were solely about use of churches, Christian churches, for graduations.
And then getting back to this school trip at Arlington, to Washington, D.C., I would assume, like most trips, the children go to various things. So if a child didn't want to go there, they wouldn't have to go into the cemetery. With this graduation, this is a once-in-a-lifetime event in a student's life.
That's correct, Your Honor. And as the Lee case holds it, it is not a voluntary event. I would reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Counsel.
Good morning. May it please the Court?
Kubinski.
Yes. Thank you. I want to briefly address what I think is overriding the considerations of the hypotheticals that the Court has given my opponent in terms of the issue of the graduation in a church in this case. There is no dispute that the ceremony itself was a secular and purely secular ceremony. Nothing about it was religious. There was no involvement of public sector workers in spreading the word of the message that my opponent is so opposed to.
Could you take a picture as you walk?
I just wanted to know how clear the record was that members of the church were not there manning the booths and handing out literature. I found the briefs a bit contradictory on that point.
The record, in my view, establishes that there were people there in the booths. The record is devoid of any evidence of what they were doing or with whom they were affiliated.
So given that this is at a very early stage of this case on summary judgment, we have to take the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiffs and assume that the church was using this as an opportunity to proselytize.
I don't think you can. I think that's the plaintiff's burden. If the plaintiff wanted to come forward with evidence on the summary judgment material to argue that there was endorsement or coercion.
No, people from the church were not the high school, but by putting it in the church, the plaintiff has pointed evidence to show that you wouldn't put people in the booths if they were going to sit there like statues. You put people in the booths so that they will interact. So
you might
record, it seems to me the record indicates that the church was using this as an opportunity.
I don't think the record indicates that. It would be the plaintiff's burden to show that there was something that those people were doing that was in any way proselytizing or advancing their religious aims. This is a summary judgment record, and that's their burden. The only evidence is that the people were there.
The booths say, come to Jesus and stuff. What are they saying? You know, here's my recipe for mac and cheese?
They might be directing people where to go, where the coat racks are, where the bathrooms are. We don't know. But my point is, the plaintiff has the burden of proof, and there was no evidence to establish that any of that action was undertaken. Yes.
Ms. Levinsky, when you received your diploma at this graduation, was that individually handed?
It was.
And that's handed by an official of the school?
Either the superintendent or the principal, but yes.
And where does that handoff occur?
It occurs up at the front as the
On the
senior.
Altar?
To be honest, I don't know if it's on the altar or not.
Do they allow photographs by the parents? Of
yes.
And what would be the backdrop of that photo?
Depends on the angle.
I see.
Depends on where the parent is standing.
The photos in the record was the giant cross.
Sure. And the photographs that the plaintiff put in the record are, of course, close-ups of every religious emblem in the church. And we understand that. We've never shied away from the fact that this is a religious building.
Exactly. And it's absurd to call it an auditorium. It is the consecrated area of the church that people go to on Sundays and worship God in. That's where you were.
Auditorium is what Elmbrook calls it at times, so it's not absurd.
They want to. It is the sanctuary of the church where people go on Sunday to worship God.
That is true.
The church would never deny that, I'm sure.
And I'm sure you're right, yes. But that doesn't make what happens there a religious exercise, which
well,
is what...
Yes, you're right. The district judge said that, but I can well imagine, bearing in mind that this is not a concern about the majority, there may be many people who are observant Christians who are completely comfortable in that environment. But if there are people who are not, they may be stuck with the choice, do I send my kid to the graduation ceremony or do we stay home? You know, am I being sent a message that I'm an outsider? You know, I'm an Orthodox Jew. I'm a strictly observant Muslim. I really can't be there under this looming cross. And so I guess I just have to opt out of this particular aspect of my child's education. And, you know, we could just say tough luck. You know, all of these things are optional. Don't go to the honors ceremony. Don't go to your kid's graduation. But some people actually take their religion very seriously.
I have no doubt that some people take their religion seriously, and I also have no doubt that there may be people who have a problem with being in the presence of religious iconography.
Right, and so our view is, your view is, that it's just tough luck for those people. They can go home and take their religion seriously, just don't participate in our school's events.
My position is that the Constitution dictates whether that's unlawful or not,
well,
and it's not.
Well, and so your position is that the Establishment Clause, contrary to what Justice O'Connor has suggested, does not contain any element of prohibitions against coercion. It doesn't contain any elements of causing some people to feel like outsiders in our society. That the Establishment Clause is really, you're taking the Thomas view of the Establishment Clause. As long as the state doesn't pass a law saying all people shall be members of the Elmbrook Church, then it's fine.
My position is that there is a test that's recognized under establishment law that looks at a coercion analysis. So I'm not suggesting that there is no legal framework that one can use to look at, okay, what is coercive activity?
But you have said that for anyone whose religious tenets, and there are affidavits in this record that there are some such people, will preclude them from going to a place like the sanctuary of the Elmbrook Church. We may think these people are being picky. We may criticize them in various ways. We may think they're sticking their heads in the sand for Western society. Be that as it may, that's their belief. And I would have thought from the Hosanna-Tabor case that it's not the business of the courts to tell people what to believe. So if they believe it, they believe it. And your view of the Establishment Clause is that those people can be excluded from school events.
My view is that the Constitution doesn't prohibit the activity, and therefore they will need to make a choice.
In other words, they can be excluded because I'm postulating their sincere religious belief forbids them from going, and you say that that's just fine under the Establishment Clause, that we can have events that Christians can go to but not Jews, or maybe in some communities we can have events that Jews can go to but the Christians don't feel comfortable in, and that we can exclude people from the public based on their religion.
It's my position is that if people choose to be excluded, that's not a
based
constitutional violation.
So,
I understand that, yes.
So your view of the Establishment Clause is that it does not protect people who are minority religious adherents.
In this case, under these
under
facts,
all
yes.
Cases. No, you
no,
don't have
then
to
I, d- I disagree.
Principle.
Because I think there can be, in essence, instances, hypotheticals, where somebody enters into a religious location or there's religious symbols where if there's some element of a practice or procedure going on that has a religious exercise or practice involved, then yes, it would violate the Constitution.
Ms. Lubinsky, do you view this simply as a school tour on comparative religions?
I'm sorry. I didn't understand your question. I'm sorry.
Do you view this as if a school district promoting understanding of other faiths would have students visit other churches or synagogues or mosques? Is that sort of a school tour, so to speak? And so there's no difference on this graduation from a half-hour visit over 3 weeks to three different, is that your position?
That is my position. In fact, it's been held constitutional by multiple courts that schools can, in fact,
so
you're, teach
so
religion.
All this was is just a school tour to a, in this case, to a,
this
nothing,
is a,
the graduation is the same as a tour, an afternoon tour on the study of comparative religion.
For your, the answer to your question is yes. For practical purposes, the event is a high school graduation. It's a public high school graduation where people have matriculated with the school for 12 years. They know they're not going to their school. They know why the location was being chosen. It was chosen by the students.
Really, is it really a course in comparative religions? Does religion have anything to do with it?
Religion has nothing to do with it. My point is that they're there for completely different reasons unrelated to religion.
It's a rented hall.
Correct. It is a rented hall and nothing more.
So
yes, there are religious...
If that's correct, the school board in Elmbrook meets, what, about twice a month?
Could be once a month, but thereabouts.
And they could hold their meetings in the auditorium there because it's convenient, it's got good audiovisual equipment, it's comfortable?
There could be an argument that could possibly be unconstitutional.
Well,
for example,
what would that argument be?
The argument would be this. What is the basis for the board to hold their meetings there? Okay, let's say they have a perfectly fine location in their school, maybe perfectly fine AVs for all of the people that come, and they only go there because so-and-so knows so-and-so or so-and-so's, they go there for the religious aspect of it. In that case, there could be an argument that there is an endorsement of religion by the board holding its meetings there because the history and the context matter.
I don't understand that distinction at all. It seems to me that your answer to Judge Hamilton should be sure. They can hold their school board meetings in the sanctuary of the church, and maybe they're doing so just because, as Judge Hamilton said, it's a comfortable building and nice AV and lots of free parking. Or maybe they're doing it because a couple of people have choir rehearsal afterwards and it's nice for them not to have to repark after. You know, I don't see, if all you're saying is it's nothing but a room and it's a room with a particular decor, but it's nothing but a room, why don't you just say fine?
What I was answering is under certain circumstances it could be unconstitutional or an argument could be made, but not under your hypothetical, no.
I don't see what the circumstances could possibly be that would make it unconstitutional under your view.
Under an endorsement analysis, the court is required to look, and municipal governments like my school is required to look at the history and the context, and could a reasonable objective observer view the government action as endorsing religion? And if there is no reason, and I was just throwing out a hypothetical bat, if there's no reason why that board is in that church other than to be in the church so that people will be there, then...
Same reasons here. Convenience, comfort, good parking.
And that would be...
Low rent.
If that was the history and context and a reasonable objective observer would not see it as endorsement, which I would not, I would agree that that would be constitutional.
Can you talk about that reasonable observer a little bit? Does the reasonable observer... Do we need to think about somebody who is not an adherent of the religion in question?
That's not the proper analysis. The analysis
How about doing it Judge Hamilton's way, for a minute?
So you want to look at it from a non-adherence perspective?
Yeah, the people whose rights are protected by the Establishment Clause.
Okay, well, I think everybody's rights are protected, religious and non-religious, but if we're looking at it from a non-religious person's perspective,
someone who is not an adherent of the religion that is arguably being endorsed.
Okay. Then they would need that person, let's say in the Brookfield, Wisconsin, right outside of Milwaukee, they're a non-believer and they don't believe in the Elmbrook.
What if they're Islamic? They're not. I think it's terrible for you to call these people non-believers. There are other religions in the world.
Okay. Whatever the case may be, my point was this.
Wrong with non-believers.
My point is this. In this case, in this history, in this context, there is no reasonable argument that even that person, that Islamic, no matter who it is,
it's not
would not under
church is non-denominational, isn't that correct?
It is a non-denominational church.
In,
yes.
In your view, are the plaintiffs with their affidavits simply being irrationally hypersensitive about their religious beliefs?
I don't want to demean their religious beliefs. They hold them, and I believe they hold them truly. And I have no doubt that everything they've said is true. My point is that you can't analyze under the First Amendment a endorsement claim that the plaintiffs are making here by viewing it under the lens of a person who does not understand the history or context of the challenged act.
That is not the question. The question is whether the reasonable observer analysis must take into account the views of the people who may feel excluded, that is, the non-adherents of the religion. As Judge Wood suggested, I'm sure many, many people felt entirely comfortable in this graduation ceremony. But that's not the test under the Establishment Clause.
I would agree. And the test requires, under the reasonable objective observer standard, to look at the history and context.
Well, let's talk about the history and context. We're not talking about the freeze in the Supreme Court or the name of Corpus Christi, are we? We're talking about a practice that had no history prior to 2000. Is that right?
That is correct.
So what is the historical context? This isn't Columbus's first high school, right? I mean, what exactly is, when you talk about it, context, what this practice is not age old, is it not?
It is not, and I would agree with you. We have to look at why the decision, how we got to where we were. And I'm sure your honors are familiar with the record, but the bottom line is there is no doubt that this practice emanated from students. They wrote a letter. The letter's in the record. I won't go over it in detail. But they ticked off the list of the very things that you're talking about. They talked about the crowded gyms, the stuffy gyms, no AC. And they looked at alternatives. To go to one of your questions of my opponent about cost, it is not accurate to suggest that this church was not charging market rates. Exhibit, this is in the record, document 27. It's a chart we put in that had the cost of the various facilities that were among those that could be considered. Some of them, recall that the church was about $2,000 to $2,200. There was one at $1,896, one at $2,300, one at $1,900, one at $2,450.
Right, but actually that gets me, though, to a question that I wanted to say. Suppose the church, in its mission statement for itself, says, we want to rent the church out to as many public organizations as possible so that we can spread the word of Jesus most effectively in our community. That is one of our primary goals. We're an evangelical church. And so we're going, you know, you can look at costs of different facilities, but I don't think that actually answers the question that I was trying to raise, which is, what does it cost the church to be open for that? How, you know, in terms of support personnel, in terms of heat, the size of the church varied a bit from some of the other facilities. So if the church is doing this in order to advance its mission, doesn't that lead one in the direction of saying that the church is, in fact, using this for religious purposes?
No, because we don't look at the church's purpose.
We are looking, though, at what happened. That's why I get back to my people manning the booths and stuff and all the literature around and the Bibles and the hymnals and the, you know, all the rest of it. The church has found a way to get a nice captive audience.
That may very well be true in the fact that this is one of those mega complexes that is cutting edge, large, ample parking, really, really neat video screens. You know, kids' pictures are their faces are shown right up on the screens. And all that's great. And it may be that the church's reason why they allow people to come in for whatever fee they set is for their purposes.
And Mr. Lubinsky, you're saying maybe. The record doesn't show what the intent or purpose of the church was. Am I correct?
You are correct. And that wasn't in the record for the very reason that the church's purpose is irrelevant in the constitutional analysis.
It's actually not. There's a purpose or effect test. But I will agree with you that the plaintiffs have stressed effect, not purpose.
The purpose, though, on the purpose and effect test is the government's purpose. What is the school's purpose in being there? And the concession by the plaintiffs has been, yeah, we don't have evidence that the school chose that purposely because of religion. It's not the Elmbrook Church in my case's purpose. So, but you're right. There's a purpose prong and an effects prong, and we're not here on a purpose case. This has never been a purpose case. It's always been an effects case. And so, what we have to do is we have to say, would a reasonable, objective observer, knowledgeable about the history and context, understand that simply by having a public high school graduation where the people that are there are the high school kids, their parents, their siblings, who go to a public school and are there with all of this wonderful amenities, are somehow thinking that the government is endorsing that religion.
Right, that's right. So the Jewish kids who were there with their siblings and the Muslim kids who were there and the Hmong kids who were there, if there are any in Brookfield, and the Hindu kids who were there sitting there in the middle of this thing thinking, oh, isn't this wonderful? Here we are in a Christian church.
They may be thinking that, but the Constitution doesn't prohibit
right,
that.
But the Constitution takes a tough luck approach. Yeah.
None of those amenities are important to the purpose of a graduation, are they?
No, they certainly make it nicer, but I would agree.
Right. And so the impetus for this came from students who felt that the amenities of the high school gymnasiums were inadequate.
Apparently. Substandard, yes.
Substandard. But it was not that the high school gymnasium was unavailable or that it was not useful to the purpose or that it did not meet the purposes of holding a high school graduation ceremony. It's that they wanted something better.
True, although later in the years, slightly untrue. There's affidavit testimony from the superintendent that in and the principals that in the 07, maybe 08, maybe 09 period, the volume of kids in Brookfield Central and East, you know, the population rose, there were more kids, and they were going to have to limit the attendance and issue tickets to kids to only allow a certain number of people. So there were size
happens
issues.
In every school district around
later
the
on,
state
yes.
of Wisconsin and elsewhere.
Yes.
Limited tickets to graduation. That's
yes.
very common. There's overflow rooms.
Yes.
Video is made available, et cetera, video feeds.
Yes.
That an insignificant point in terms of the impetus behind this. The reason why this action was taken is because the amenities were not so great in the gymnasium, but it was nothing more than that. The gym was fine otherwise.
That is true.
Right. And
at the initial stage.
As against the Establishment Clause interests here of the dissenters, those amenities don't stack up very favorably. And this is an inherently religious space that is impossible to secularize. And indeed, any attempt to secularize it for purposes of this ceremony would violate free exercise rights, as we've already established. So the fact that a secular ceremony is moved to a pervasively non-secular space that it is impossible to secularize is what I'm struggling with here. In terms of both a coercion analysis and an endorsement analysis. Now, would the school district have approved of moving the graduation ceremony to a religious space whose message it did not approve of?
There's no evidence of that, and I can't say that they would or they wouldn't. That was not an option, given the size. If you look at the charts, there were no other religious facilities that had the vault or the seating capacity, so there's no evidence. My opponents suggest, well, surely they wouldn't have gone there. There's no evidence to support that. I can't answer your question and say, well, surely they would, because there was no facility capable of being of housing these graduations.
Has this happened anywhere in the country?
I'm sorry?
Has what you're described happened anywhere in the country where a public school has held graduation ceremonies?
Yes, it has happened. There are actual cases cited in both parties' briefs where district court levels, not at the circuit court level, have addressed it, but district court level, both state court and federal courts, have decided cases involving, for lack of a better word, graduation in a church cases.
In synagogues or mosques?
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know. I don't know if any of those religious graduation in a church cases involved churches of the type you're speaking of. I didn't get into that level of detail.
And no evidence as to whether those particular religions would ever approve of it either.
Correct.
Or make the facilities available.
Correct. We know one thing for certain, and that is within the area, geographic area around Brookfield, Wisconsin, we didn't have options like that for the students to choose from. Why that is, I don't know, but they didn't exist. And they're...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, please.
Yeah, the vast majority of students in the district are Christians, right?
There's no evidence of that. There's evidence that the vast majority of students voted in favor of going to Elmbrook.
Right, and a fifth of them were minorities, and the minorities voted against going to the church.
That can't be right because the vote in 2006 was 97% to go to Elmbrook. So if your statistics on a fifth are right, that doesn't correlate with a 97% vote.
Well, the parents experienced hostility, and the kids experienced hostility who voted against it.
There is hearsay evidence in the record with regard to that, yes. But there is no evidence that these plaintiffs did. I don't know if that's a point that's all that important.
Well,
but there is evidence in the record.
Does that have an impact on the reasonable observer analysis?
The reasonable observer would be aware of what was going on in this community. And if the plaintiffs wanted to put forth evidence that what was going on in this community would impact that analysis, they certainly should have done that, and they didn't.
I'm not sure why that factor here, putting it to a vote of the students and that the students approved of it, makes any difference. This is an anti-majoritarian.
I agree
right.
with you. The student vote doesn't make a difference. I was simply answering the question of a fifth of the student population is minority and they didn't approve of it. I was simply answering that by saying that can't be. But I would agree with you that the fact that there was a student vote is...
Ms. Levinsky, 5 minutes.
Thank you.
That factor just drops out of the equation, whether we're using this reasonable observer test or not.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I would, however, posit that the fact that this originated from the students, as you previously articulated, the rationale for it, what was going on in the community, other things that are very important in that analysis is what was going on in that community. And the record is very clear. What was going on is they didn't have the size at the later years. They put referendum to the electorate that was once rejected, then passed. They built an auditorium, and they've had their graduations there.
But you don't preclude returning to this church, do you?
We had that dialogue.
Yes, we did, and I'd like to have your answer again, Ms. Levinsky.
My answer then and my answer now is the school district has agreed that for all intents and purposes, it has every intention of staying there. As I indicated in our oral argument initially, if the building were struck by lightning, My client is unwilling to say.
Sure, let's take that a little step further. You know, we talk about air conditioning and high tech, and suppose, unfortunately, mechanical problems at the high school caused a problem. So would it be your position for 60, 90 days school be held at the church, school functions? That would be okay.
Oh, you mean education?
Education, you know, reading, writing.
Under your scenario, 60 to 90 days, if there were facilities that were available to house students and they were educated in the same manner as they were in the school district for a limited period of time, and the community was aware of that, and everybody knew because this is the area, you got to bus people there, we don't want to be too far away, parents are concerned about that. If the community knew of that, then there would be no endorsement.
If it chose to do it indefinitely, that'd be
a different issue.
Well, you spoke of the referendum, and suppose we have a district where the referendum seems never to pass, and we have this attractive church facility. Why not, and it's not really in use except, let's say, Wednesday nights and Sundays. What about the school just in a semi-permanent basis using that facility?
I think answered that by saying I think that if they did that on a permanent basis, there would be a larger question, which is where are our public tax dollars going? And if they're not going to the facilities, then they're going to some other facility. Presumably they're paying rent being there. Okay, so it's an arm's length transaction. But under that hypothetical, there's no place. Everything is going on in a religious facility. In this case, it's a once a year event for 2 hours.
So
we're
a far cry. It's a degree thing. So you can feel you're an other because it's just 2 hours, not 2 months. Right? So it's a temporal issue with you, isn't it?
In some instances, yes. I think under an extreme scenario, yes. Having public secular because of the endorsement analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you there? If the only reason you're there is because of the religion and the
community. It's like if you're a member of one faith and you're invited to a wedding at another faith's institution and you go there. That's the same thing as a high school graduation, going to that wedding, in your view.
In my view, it's substantially similar. Now, Lee does talk about the impressionability of the graduates themselves, so there's that analysis over and above your wedding hypothetical, but they're substantially similar.
Is there anything in the record that indicates the makeup of the community or the school with regard to religious?
There is not. There's no percentages or population of students that are, you know, this religion, that religion, or non-religion. There just isn't.
And is that the kind of thing the United States Census tracks? In other words,
I'm going to be honest, I don't know.
I think it is, actually.
I'm not sure. It may very well be. I don't know that the school district would have access to that.
Sure they are. It's on the website. It's publicly censored.
Oh, you mean of the community itself as opposed to the population of the students?
Sure.
The school board knows the makeup of the community.
I would agree with you in a large sense. Absolutely.
Of course they do.
Yeah, that's their job. So I know my time is about to be up. I appreciate your opportunity today, and for the reasons we've discussed, I would ask you to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lubinsky. Organizer, anything further?
Yes, Your Honor. First, to answer Judge Canty's question, there is evidence in the record that the vast majority of students in the school district were Christian. That's page 8262, paragraph 12.
Christian, Catholic, Christian, or Christian, or?
We don't know, Your Honor.
What if the school burned down and the only facility where they could hold classes until the building was rebuilt was a church, which would be plausible because the church is not in use most of the week, Sunday. Would that be unconstitutional for that to use the church?
If there's religious iconography in the classrooms and the hallways, yes.
Look, we're talking about this church. Right?
Yes, under the reasoning of the defendants, it would be constitutional for a school to hold its school in a religious environment every day.
Why don't you answer my question, okay?
Yes, it would be unconstitutional.
So this would be constitutional.
It's unconstitutional
if
it's a religious environment.
If the school burns down and the only facility within range where they could hold classes temporarily until the school is rebuilt was this church, would that be unconstitutional?
Yes, Your Honor.
So they don't get an education because?
Your Honor, I mean, that type is also not realistic. There's got to be another place they can go.
Not at all unrealistic.
So they get no education because there's no other facility?
If they can't find a secular building, they have to rent trailers. There's always going to be an option.
So the first week after a disastrous fire would be a violation of the Constitution. Are you saying that? Are you saying emergency use would violate the Constitution?
Your Honor, there's no compelling interest analysis that allows the government to override the Establishment Clause. But it's not just emergency use, but if a school wanted to lease facilities for it.
You can't possibly mean that. Your position surely doesn't force you into that view, does it?
I think I want to stick to my guns on that. But it's not just emergency use. The defendant's arguments are that if there's a secular reason for using a church building, you could hold school there every day. You could bus children to school in buses filled with religious posters if you're leasing those buses from
the
church company.
A genuine emergency can override the concerns you express.
So there are two hospitals in a town, and one of them is public, one is religious. Public hospital is knocked out, is flooded, a fire, something like that. And the public employees shift over to providing publicly funded services at the religious hospital. Surely you wouldn't see a problem.
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Lukianitzer, 1 minute.
Your Honor, one thing I want to emphasize is that the case law has made clear that no religious purpose is necessary to show a violation of the coercion test or the endorsement test.
What is the coercion exactly?
to be immersed in a religious environment.
What do you mean by coerced? First of all, they don't have to attend. If they do attend their graduation, what exactly is there being coerced?
They're essentially being forced to stare at a giant cross for 2 hours that looms right above the stage where these graduations occur.
They don't have to go, but if they do go, the coercion consists in, they're not actually forced to, but they see these things. Unless they close their eyes, they see religious symbols. That to you is coercion. And what are they being coerced to do? They're just being coerced to be in the presence of these symbols they don't like.
They're being immersed in a religious environment. In Leaf, the prayer had been projected on the screen instead of being spoken orally. There would still have been a violation. A religious message is heard with the eyes can be equally coercive or powerful to those heard with the ears. There's no principled or logical basis to treat visual messages differently from oral messages.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.